Thank you for joining us as Southeast celebrates News and Public Affairs Day. Join Martha Pearson and a local panel of experts as they discuss the trials and tribulations of the health needs of the Panhandle. Shows like Talk of Alaska and Line One focus on the problems and health concerns of all Alaskans all over the state. But what about right here in Southeast? Stick with us as we discuss the state of health in the Panhandle.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today on the Southeast Celebrates News Day. This is Martha Pearson joining you for this hour, and the topic is the state of health in the Panhandle. And we have some great guests lined up to chat with you, but first we're going to say a few thank yous. Fred?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to Judith Rice for the challenge grant for bears, birds, and baleens. Very nice. There's also an anonymous from Seattle, Washington. Thanks for the great reporting. I enjoy occasional listening from a distance online with you all to catch up with Sitka. Thanks, David Christ Tompkins. He says, I need the news when I am not in town. It would be a different life without it. Thanks to Kent Hansen, Tom Climo, and another thank you to President Richard Peterson and Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska with their generous $1,000 challenge sponsorship that got us going this morning. And remember, every contribution will enter you into the drawing to win two round-trip tickets on Alaska seaplanes to wherever they fly.
That sounds like a tremendous opportunity. So thanks again for listening and thinking about making your contribution and entry in for the Alaska Seaplanes Prize. We are addressing health here this hour, and as we like to say in the health business, if you want to know about health from five people, you'll get five different answers, because health is one of those concepts that is a very personal, subjective experience. We're going to have some great alternative views coming up in the next hour. First, we want to hear, though, we would be remiss in our presentation of health about health in Alaska, health in the Panhandle, if we didn't talk about public health nursing. So we're going to bring in our guest. Our first guest is going to be Kristen Homer. She is a former public health nurse and has also worn many healthcare hats during her career. We are in the studio now with Kristen Homer. She is a nurse practitioner working in Sitka, Alaska. Kristen, you've had several roles in healthcare around the community. Tell us a little bit about some of the various roles you've had.
Sure. Well, I started off in Sitka as a nurse practitioner working out in the villages. Mm-hmm. So I was a supervisor in the health aid program, mostly traveled out to Angoon and Pelican. After that, I spent 5 years working for the Sitka Public Health Center. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was at the Coast Guard, working at the air station as a family nurse practitioner in their clinic. Mm-hmm. And then for the last 11 years, I have been at Mount Edgecumbe High School. The state of Alaska contracts with CERCH to provide health services for the school. So I see students and manage the health center there.
Fantastic. So you've really seen a lot of diverse avenues that people can access health and are able to promote their own health. I wanted to chat with you specifically about your work as a public health nurse. A lot of people might not be familiar with the public health nursing program in the state of Alaska. And I know it's been a while. That wasn't your most recent position. But tell us a little, just a little, about maybe the history of what's public health nursing all about? What's the intention of it? And how did that look like for you when you worked in it?
Sure. Well, I think public health nursing in Alaska has played a vital role in the health of in the health of our state, just because, you know, people are so spread out in remote areas. And so public health nurses have been traveling to these remote places, mm-hmm. and providing care where there aren't a lot of other services. So, you know, I think public health in Alaska has really taken the lead in more independent practice. Public health nurses took on big roles. You know, so public health nurses played a vital role in the TB outbreaks, mm-hmm. traveling around. And I think that set up a system where public health nurses played a really important role in mm-hmm. health. When I started at the Sitka Public Health Center, the Sitka Public Health Center did a lot with well child care. So, you know, well child care provides regular checkups to children. And it's really focusing not only on the health, but the social aspect, development, mm-hmm. immunizations, health of the parents, and then, you know, providing an opportunity for education. So that was a big role. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of, mostly it was kind of 4 weeks to 5 years of age. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun. Immunizations were a big thing. We're all pretty familiar with immunizations now, but the prevention of infectious disease.
Yeah.
And then another component was communicable disease. So we did a lot of sexually transmitted infection testing, mm-hmm. HIV testing, which was a little bit more complex then than it is now. Now yeah. you can walk in and, you know, I can swab a teenager's gums and have a result in 20 minutes, whereas when I was at public health, you would, you know, there was extensive counseling that happened. You would take a blood sample. It would take a couple weeks to come back. They'd have to make an appointment. You'd have to give the result in person.
Yeah.
But so a lot of sexually transmitted infection follow-up, TB. We were still mm-hmm. seeing some TB at that point. And then the last thing we did when I left public health, there was more kind of emergency response and planning.
Yeah.
So as I was leaving, we were participating in a couple of community-wide drills, preparing for big vaccine mm-hmm. clinics for responses to mm-hmm. Outbreaks of infectious disease.
That was kind of a psychic thing you didn't know what was coming, but
no,
it did come.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so certainly, you know, I have not been involved in, you know, I've not worked for public health now for a number of years, but in my role as the nurse practitioner over at Mount Edgecombe High School, mm-hmm. COVID has been a big a big deal for us. It's been a big deal for everyone, but kind of managing that in a boarding school setting has been a big part of my job for the last couple of years. And really, I don't think Mount Edgecombe High School would have done as well as we had without the guidance of public health. And mm-hmm. I think Sitka's really fortunate to have the strong public health nursing staff that we've had. Denise Ewing really...
She was a key player of a, you know, I just looked at the leaders of the time that really ushered us through the COVID response. Mm-hmm. And she was one of the key elements of sanity and facts and the ability to operationalize the things we needed to do to stay safe as a community in Sitka. And I will give my, you know, hats off to public health nursing across the state. It seems, you know, 2-1 that I have met in my career in healthcare. They're independent and fierce. You know, they're just willing to do what's needed to do to look after the community. So it seems like that legacy of the frontier nurse, the one who, you know, battles their way through wind and rain and snow and gets there and gets the kid what they need, continues to this day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely present in the nurses we have now.
Absolutely. So, Kristen, thank you for coming on. We could talk so much more about public health nursing as a organization, as a legacy in Alaska. I'm sure there are just books worth of stories we could tell. But for our brief overview of health aspects of health here on Raven Radio, and, you know, we would just be remiss without really acknowledging and honoring the role of public health nursing in our state and in our communities across Southeast. And the hope that, you know, as public radio and public health work hand in hand, and we'll continue to work hand in hand, we'll continue with those strong partnerships. Any final shout outs to, you know, or crazy stories you want to share? You know, what was your weirdest thing you had to do as a public health nurse?
You know, when I actually did a summer internship mm-hmm. with public health while I was getting my nursing degree. And so I was working with Penny Lehman mm-hmm. and Michelle Kennedy.
Nice.
And there was botulism, a few cases of botulism. And so one of my first days, we were going down Cat Leanne trying to find, going through garbage cans looking for the
tainted
cans.
Wow, your first job was like, dumpster diving.
Right, and this is fun. Right.
That's that other duties as assigned part of the job description that I always love. Well, thank you, Kristen Homer. Again, we've been talking with Kristen Homer. She is a nurse practitioner working with the students at Mount Edgecombe High School, and she's here on Raven Radio with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Southeast Celebrates Newsday. And this is the State of Health in the Panhandle with our host, Martha Pearson. I'm Fred. And I'd like to give a special thanks to Sea Alaska Corporation, who's generously challenged everybody to donate with $2,500. So make your contribution now by phone 907-747-5877 or go online to our website, kcaw.org. We have a goal today of $30,000, and we've already raised $8,725.
Woo! Woo!
Thank you very much, and let's keep it rolling.
And also want to acknowledge that a lot of people have been coming forth to give their time and talent for this, and to celebrate that, it's just, when you think about health, like what's one of the main aspects of any person's health is getting the right information at the right time. So as we talk about health and health issues in the Panhandle, it's really important, I think, to acknowledge that places like Raven Radio are your source of great intel, great information that's going to help you make the right decision for you and your family. We have I'm going to give a teaser. We have a upcoming guest just joining us in the air room here. Kari Lundgren is here. She is a psychiatric physician's assistant, and that is a big fancy title, and I'll let Kari articulate more what that means, because I'm sure she went to school and worked really hard for it. But what do we have to share? We have facts. We have best practices. We have evidence. And these are the things that public radio can bring to your table, to your dinnertime conversation, to your thought process. And then from there, only better things can happen. As Fred said, we've had a lot of people come forward with some great donations today, some great match challenges. And let's just keep that momentum rolling and have us see what we can do today.
Well, as we know, knowledge is power. Wellness is power. You know, it really promotes our functionality. And so thank you for inviting me to be with you today here. I love Raven Radio. I've had the opportunity to be a part of it in many different ways. And so it's great to come in my daytime persona in psychiatry and share it with you. And I partner with people with medications and other medical interventions, because it's not always just medications, it's vitamins and things like that that can really help promote a mood, enhanced mood and feelings of well-being. So
Kari, you are a clinician. People come to you to say, help me. I need, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z. What are some of the most common conditions that you are able to help people with here in Southeast?
Well, I think, this time of year, I think the seasonal affective symptoms are probably the most common. And so I think it's a great time to kind of revisit those. Most commonly in general, depression type symptoms, feeling listless or sad, tearful, decreased interest in your usual activities or even isolating from friends and family, low energy, like fatigue, like just don't feel physically like you can move like you used to, problem sleeping, either too much or too little, Change in cognition or concentration. You just can't remember things. You're like, God, my memory. It's just, I don't know what's wrong. Feeling worthless. And interestingly, excessive guilt is one that gets missed often. And just perseverating over something that you said and you feel so bad and then you feel so bad. And that's very common and can be, I think, when people learn, oh my gosh, I can actually take care of this, because it can be very disabling. And then thoughts of harming yourself, or even as bad as suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. Everything from, I just don't want to wake up. I'm tired of feeling like this and I don't want to wake up, which is more like passive suicidal feelings, to more active feelings, which are worrisome. And we would always encourage you to reach out to emergency services to have that looked into.
So if you or someone in your your circle of loved ones are experiencing feelings like this, the key takeaway that I hear you saying is that these are not feelings you have to live with. These are not feelings that are, usually attributed with a healthy mindset, and that there is help available to get you back to a space where you can just be on a more even keel. I mean, I don't know that it's realistic to say that everything is, there's a utopia where you never have a sad moment. Maybe, Kari, you live in that world.
We all could use a little clinic two from time to time. A clinic two is where I work. That's the behavioral health clinic. We all need a little behavioral health. Everybody.
Absolutely.
These feelings are very normal. It's when they become so overwhelming and they become disabling is when you really would need to seek help. And what's really great, there's a new number, 988. It's kind of like 911, but it's for specifically if you're feeling alone, or even worse, in distress. Anything from loneliness to very distressed, 988 is a great number, and you'll get linked with the behavioral health provider and can start working through the next steps.
Yeah, and for us in Southeast Alaska, where many people don't live by a clinic, or they might be out on their boat, or they might be working somewhere very remote, 988 is going to be a resource for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, somebody is available to talk with you and just say, hey, I hear you.
And validate. I mean, it's a very common, many of us struggle, and it's nice to hear, that's a very common way to think and feel, it's just, we want to help you lighten that load.
Yeah.
When we talk about seasonal though, we're all seasonally affected. We all are seasonally affected. We sleep a little longer. We eat a few more carbs. We gain a little weight sometimes. But it becomes a disorder when that goes to the next level. And so when we talk about fall seasonal affective disorder, it can be oversleeping. It can be appetite changes, craving foods high in carbohydrates. Because literally your brain is saying, wake me up. Give me more sugar. Wake me up. And that's why carbs is the craving. And then actual weight gain. And then fatigue. So that's very fall-like seasonal affective. But just to throw up, because the light is coming back here in a few days,
nice.
Thankfully, I just want to put in a little pitch for the other seasonal affective that often, again, doesn't really get identified and sometimes addressed, and that is the spring-summer seasonal affective disorder. And that would be all those symptoms that we talked about earlier that have the depressive features, but also in spring-summer, it can be trouble sleeping, insomnia, decreased appetite, weight loss, agitation, irritability, anxiety, that type of thing. So it's almost the opposite of the fall where you slow down and you're fatigued and you're sleeping too much, whereas in spring, you're anxious, irritable, still some depression. There's usually some depression in there, but it's much more irritable, anxious. And so, again, that would be an opportunity to partner with, a behavioral health provider or prescriber and have that addressed if it's very, if it's really getting in the way of you feeling functional.
Yeah. And when I hear you talking, too, I really feel like all of us have to remember to just pay attention to how we're feeling.
Right.
Being in the moment saying, gosh, why did I snap at my person in my household? Or why does that XYZ bother me when...
Right, or why did I tear up during a paint commercial on TV? Everybody tears up at the puppy commercials in the cages. Everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's normal tearing. But like, Benjamin paints commercial and you get tearful. Tearing up in inappropriate times can be a sign of an encroaching depression. So
right.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there is help available. Mm-hmm. And whether you are have access to your mental health provider or you just dial that 988, talk to a friend, talk to somebody you trust, mm-hmm. go for a walk, get that light on the brain. What's actually happening, Kari, when, you know, when people say, oh, it's so dark, I feel so down in the dumps. Is there an actual effect of light mm-hmm. affecting your brain chemistry?
Absolutely. There's a part, it's like the limbic part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And light hits it, and that part of the brain says, wake up, it's time to hunt and gather. Mm-hmm. Some people's brains need more light in order to get that the limbic brain to wake up and get into action. And so that's where the seasonal affective part comes in. Mm-hmm. So that's why, as part of the therapy, light therapy can be extremely effective and cost effective. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, for the fall, the light starts to change radically in late August, but people may not have the symptoms until October, November. Mm-hmm. So logic would have it, if you have seasonal affective disorder and light therapy helps you, you need to start that light therapy in late August to get ahead of of the neurotransmitter curve that you're kind of falling off of.
Sure.
So then by October, November, you're kind of ramped up and your brain is awake and alive and awake and alert, I should say. Always alive.
Let's hope
to
so.
Hunt and gather, you know. They're trying to wake yourself up.
So you're putting you're putting some money in the bank, so to speak.
Correct.
And getting ahead of that darkness curve that's coming. And
correct.
You know, it's a nice way to think about it too. Kids going back to school, let's start ramping up the light bank in the brain, if that's something that you find works for you. Another alternative is to win the 2 round trip tickets on Alaska seaplanes and go someplace a little more sunny.
Right, Angoon. I mean, they absolutely have much more sunlight than we do.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's a public health study.
That's where I would
go. You know,
seriously. Kluwak.
Yeah. Are the people in Kluwak actually happier because they have more light? You know, that you could do all kinds of research with that.
I would say half of our translator stations probably have, the peak sunlight compared to the other half of our translator community. So it'd be kind of fun to kind of do a little spectrum there. Yeah. Even. Fly north, young man,
yes,
young woman.
Exactly. So, you know, this is Kari Lundgren talking with us about a really significant aspect of health, which is the way the seasons affect our mood, how all of us, if you're a human being, you're going to experience some anxiety and depression in your life. It is part of being human. But the great news is that doesn't have to be a bad word or a scary word. There's a lot of things we understand about behavioral health and mental health now that even 20 years ago was much more mysterious. And these types of feelings that can be so disabling can be managed. They can really be managed quite well with the right clinical oversight and with the right just lifestyle steps. Again, getting mm-hmm. that sunlight, getting that daily activity mm-hmm. outside of some sort. Just going for a walk every day can
definitely
be a really beneficial thing for coping with the blues.
I'm like, exclamation point. There's these t-shirts now, and somebody came up with it before I got them printed, but it's like, got dopamine? ? and that's exactly it, because we know that when you go for a walk, it doesn't have to be run. If you go for a walk outside for up to this many minutes, you're actually getting more dopamine in circulation. And so you're actually naturally enhancing your chemistry by upping your dopamine. Another cost-effective intervention is vitamin D, and we've learned so much more about it. And that's an easy intervention. 2,000 international units. It sounds like a lot, but they're like little tiny, fish egg size pills. 2,000 international units is usually enough daily to keep your vitamin D at a level. And I have seen people's fatigue and cognitive slowing or fogginess clear when their vitamin D normalizes. And just so you know, here's a trivia question. What city along the West Coast, how far south do you need to fly before you can stop taking vitamin D? Where would you draw that line? Down the West Coast, how far south do you have to live in order to not take daily vitamin D anymore?
Oaxaca, Mexico?
Down. Gentlemen, any other guesses?
I would say San Diego.
Do you have a guess?
Ashland, Oregon.
Ooh, you win. Portland, Oregon.
Oh. Wow.
Yes.
Can I still go to Mexico, though?
You can. You can. And Alaska Seaplanes, let's talk to them about flying down there.
There you go.
So, yeah, but that's exactly it. Once you, if you draw a line across the U.S., once you live south of Portland, Oregon, unless you have other malabsorption things, you can stop taking vitamin D because you're in a, you're getting enough daylight to make your own. So there's a little bit there. So, but, you know, like I said, knowledge is power and lots of things. You can do lots of things to support your own wellness, you know, outside of having to enter into the medical realm, you know, and that exercise, good nutrition, and some vitamins goes a long way.
Absolutely. You're listening to Southeast Celebrates Newsday. I hope I said that right, on KCAW. Feel free to give us a call at 747-5877 if you want to show your support, or go to kcaw.org if you are working online. Fred, I'm going to pass it to you. What's our next series that we want to cover here today?
One thing we want to do is remind our renewing members, our sustainers, all current sustainers are going to be automatically entered into the drawing for those two round-trip tickets.
Yippee!
On Alaska
mm-hmm.
Seaplanes. But we do encourage you to upgrade. You could give a little more, like our Eric Jordan did this morning. And, you know, this is a great time to become a member of Raven Radio because, again, every contribution will get you entered into the drawing for the two round-trip tickets on Alaska Seaplanes. And, you know, like the title said, Southeast Celebrates Newsday. We're really celebrating our news department here, and it's an award-winning news department. We have Rob Woolsey, our news director, Catherine Rose, a reporter, Brooke Schaefer, a host and newscaster, Meredith Reddick, and then Tosh Kimmel is a former Report for America reporter. She left in October, but we remember her for her coverage of Southeast and being our eyes and ears across the panhandle, as well as also winning awards. And, of course, we have Peter Apathy, host and newscaster, and Aaron Fulton.
Well, I want to mention that the news team makes it sound so easy, but I kind of feel like they're like an iceberg. Like, we hear that salient tip of the iceberg because it's condensed, you know, it's beautifully articulated, but all the work that goes, all the research and the cooking down of that information to those salient points, there's a tremendous amount of talent and time that goes into that. And of course, we couldn't do it without your support here, listener, you know, a KCAW listener audience. So, and we couldn't do it without folks like Sea Alaska, who have got the $2,500 match on the table, but we need your help to secure that match. It's a team. We have a news team. We have a contributing team member in Sea Alaska, and we want you to join the team right now by calling 747-5877 or kcaw.org.
Awesome. I'm going to share with us a quick clip. You heard earlier we were talking with Kristen Homer, who has worked as a public health nurse, and I was able to talk with her about the COVID pandemic and the public health response to that. And I think all of us can relate to that experience. We all went through it, still going through it. But Kristen had some really interesting things to say about it as well, so I wanted to share that clip. Kristen, you've talked a little bit about how things like HIV testing has changed since you were active in public health nursing. What are some other changes that you've observed from the time you were an active public health nurse? And specifically, like, how has public health nursing changed since the pandemic? I mean, is there, have you seen any shifts in the focus on public health nursing and the types of work that is expected to do?
You know, I think locally, one of the things that we've seen, you know, Denise Ewing, as she worked with various communities, the fish processing plants with mm-hmm. COVID, she really established strong relationships with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she used that relationship to launch her efforts to bring Narcan response kits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are now available at the fish processing plants. She's working with multiple agencies to, you know, try to make the Narcan kit as available as the AED and, you know, so really a first emergency response. So I think that's one of the positives is that the pandemic really created new relationships. You know, people had to partner together. And with that foundation, I think it opens up, you know, people had to think creatively, respond to, you know, new information that was coming at you every week and adapting to that. And I think that was a bonding experience. And I think that can be used to, you know, hopefully launch other successful programs. And I think the Narcan program is really excited and needed and is, you know, maybe an indirect positive outcome from that.
Yeah, I can see that very much. You know, maybe if the relationship wasn't already there, then these ideas might not come across as well. But for better or for worse, we were all public health experts by the end of the pandemic, if you were paying attention at all. And, you know, now we can address other public health problems as they come forward and address them using the science behind public health and the methods that have been around for many years. So, yeah, that's a really nice way to put it, that we just really brought public health out of the nurse's station and into the community and doing all the things that really they've done all along, but maybe they just weren't under the spotlight quite as much. Well, you're in the spotlight now. Thank you, public health nursing, and thank you for all the nurses across the state and what they do every day to help keep our children and our communities safe and well.
Hear, hear.
Vital is vital, you can rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, vital is vital, try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, vital is vital, you can rely on nobody else.
You are listening to KCAW. This is Martha Pearson. I'm your host this hour for the State of Health in the Panhandle. We are celebrating Southeast Alaska News Day, and we are celebrating Raven Radio as a platform, as a way to get the health information that helps you and your family stay well, be the healthiest people that they can possibly be. We have Kari Lundgren and Fred Olson here in the studio helping us to thank all of the great donations that are coming in. We have a goal of $30,000 today. We are almost a third there. So really exciting to see those numbers creep up and talk about how, you know, some people might not think radio and public health are the same or related, but as Kari, you pointed out, basis of health is the right information. And, you know, you can look back 100 years, 200 years where people did not have a common, as much of a common evidence-based encyclopedia, if you will, of information they could trust. And it was a lot of guessing and not understanding what was really going on. And I think of that now, how lucky we are to have so much great evidence-based information at our fingertips, almost too much sometimes. It can be overwhelming. But then again, rely on Raven Radio and other platforms like it to say, here's the scoop. Here's the skinny. This is what we know. This is what we don't know. And help us to sort out that information and make that work. Another really keen aspect of health that I think is under appreciated until we need it, but it's the emergency management piece. We've all experienced, I'm looking around the room, you know, raise your hand if you've been through a tidal wave drill, raise your hand if you've been through an emergency landslide experience. That is, these things come very close to our hearts here in Southeast, and they're very real experiences that immediately you need an emergency management partner who's going to help you get through that and find the way forward. Fred, what are your I'm looking at you as our elder statesman in the room.
And hey now.
Hey now. You're our younger elder statesman, but I'm sure you have some great stories to tell about how just getting the right information quickly and when you needed it was important.
Yeah, I think one thing that you really saw with the KCAW website was the COVID hub.
Mm-hmm.
And there was really, you know, up to the minute information on, you know, the danger level or the alert level. Yeah, the that was very helpful and informative. And, you know, getting some real, because we seem to live in this age now where there's so much misinformation or mm-hmm. disinformation. And so it's nice to have a place where you can get the real information. And, you know, that really helped out a lot, I think. It makes you more comfortable, you know, to know what's really, even if the level's high, well, at least you know that. And so then you can, you know, act accordingly instead of, if you don't know anything, then you know, who knows what could happen.
Absolutely. So really grateful for station like Raven for bringing that information to us as listeners and as members. And, you know, another, again, when you think about radio, what's the first thing I always think about, too, is things like music, things like the entertainment factor, which is totally correct. I mean, yes, we all want to be entertained. But our next guest is Monica Chase, who is a person who's lives in Sitka for many years. She attended Mount Edgecombe High School, and she came into the studio yesterday, and we were able to chat about what health looks like to an Indigenous person and how the links between Native culture and health are so intertwined. And I want to let Monica take it away from here. Now in the studio, we have a guest, Monica Chase. Monica works over at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. She's a project coordinator for the suicide prevention program currently. But Monica, I know you've had several roles at SEARCH over the years. And what are some of the programs you've worked with over there?
So specifically, I have worked in the past for the Meth and Suicide Prevention Initiative grant that we had, and that ended. And that was my first introduction to really working with communities and working with the community members in finding out really from them what was missing, what was needed in the youth's lives and in the community itself to promote healing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was through this initial employment with SEARCH and the MSPI grant. And my mentor at that time, bless her heart, was Clara Gray. And I really learned a lot from her as far as being able to present what we had to offer as far as trainings, but really listening to what the community wanted mm-hmm. and what the community needed and how they saw us assisting them to get to that healing point.
And in that work, Monica, I know the programming had certain objectives and deliverables, as many health programs do, and those things are well and good and appropriate. I was remembering, though, working with both you and Clara, the fantastic stories of healing and compassion that came out of the work, because people were able to go hand in hand with their Alaska Native culture as a way of accessing their motivation and their self that was defined only by them. I might not be using the right words, but tell us about some of those experiences you had.
So you asking that is a very good question, because another thing that Clara brought to the table was her immense knowledge and immense pride and love for her Tlingit culture and for her Anungan culture.
Mm-hmm.
And when she danced and when she sang those songs, she became her personality, her whole human being, like leveled up 10 mm-hmm. times, because she was connecting with her ancestors. She was connecting with her own mode of healing. I'm hoping that people will remember how beautiful she was in sharing her culture and in just watching her dance and be so proud of her culture. It was really a great, great sight to see and a great memory for me to relive through your question.
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to show that you can take any piece of your culture or take any piece of another culture that you are a part of and live in every day and take that with you to promote healing throughout your life.
Mm-hmm.
I say that a lot, that healing through cultural activities really centers around knowing who you are. But again, if you don't know, you know, you can borrow something to help with your healing. But it so centering about centers about knowing who you are, and again, just finding that piece of you in your culture to carry with you.
Mm-hmm. So you talked a little about Native dancing and Native singing, and the light that you saw just erupt in both our colleague Clara and also just others, that I can really echo what you're saying. I've seen people just become supernovas while they're out there really engaged in their culture. What are some other ways? We were talking a little bit about health as a way of, like, a lot of people will say, well, health is good nutrition and you have to eat X number of calories a day and X kinds of nutrients. None of that is wrong or bad advice. But when you talk about traditional foods as something that helps you feel strong and vital, what would you add to that?
Well, let me say it this way to you. For me, being an Indigenous person, eating an apple feels very different to my mind and my body and my soul compared to when I eat a serving of muktuk or some dry fish with seal oil or some agudak or some berries. It fills my hunger in, you know, for my diet,
mm-hmm.
but it also fills my heart and my soul as an Indigenous person to eat those Indigenous foods.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very filling feeling, and you can't help but smile when you're eating Indigenous foods. I mean, it's a whole nother level of being connected with your culture, because most of the time you or someone in your family has gone out to harvest the deer, the sea asparagus, the berries, the whale, the herring eggs, the salmon, and have prepared it and used that traditional knowledge passed down for generations, and they're sharing that with you, and you feel all of that as you're eating. At least I do.
As a way of giving someone their extra strength and perseverance to make it through a tough time. You know, when you think about many health problems are because people are just slammed with difficulties, and it isn't fair often, it doesn't seem right often, but if they have that additional strength from their culture, that could help give them an edge to dig out of whatever hole they might happen to find themselves in. Have you had any experience with individuals who fought their way back from a health problem or a unhealthy situation and cited their culture as a main point that helped them to heal?
I can't think of any one specific individual, but groups of friends of mine, ranging from Unungan, Yupiks, Inupiaks, Athabascans, they and the people in Southeast, Tlingits, Haidas, and Tsimsheans, the cultural activities that any one person from a specific culture partakes in, it's an activity, because when you're doing, so sewing a sea otter headband or beading, you know, moccasin slippers, that's an immense amount of knowledge in those two separate activities. There's the sewing technique, there's the different ways to cut the sea otter so you're not having a cloud of sea otter all around you. So when someone is involved in a cultural activity, they really need to focus on their task at hand, and it is in that moment where they're healing through this activity. They're healing their grandmas, they're healing their great grandmas, they're healing ancestors from so far back, because they're in this moment and they're able to participate and work on this piece at their own leisure, and nobody is, you know, telling them they can't do that, you're not doing it the right way. And even if they may have made a few, you know, alterations to the actual pattern, they're still, their great-grandmother is still coming through that piece of art in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that is super healing for individuals. One more thing I'd like to add is a friend of mine who is Yupik, she shares a lot of her traditional knowledge with me and says that when someone from when an indigenous person is in the moment working on a project, you know, best as you can, be just, you know, have the distractions away from you. Because I told her that I typically like to listen to Fleetwood Mac or, you know, the Rolling Stones when I bead or sew. And she told me that when we're doing those activities, we need to feel our ancestors through our activities, and that our mind needs to be open to feel and not distracted with all the other words and singing of Fleetwood Mac. So I have changed the way I partake in those cultural activities, because I want to feel the knowledge coming through my head to my fingers to the piece that I'm working on. So that was really a huge learning moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
She was taught by her elders, and I didn't pay attention too much to my elders when they were teaching us, so.
It's good to have a second chance and a third chance and as many chances as you need to really connect with your culture. I really like the way you describe the connection to the past and how it flows through you, and that has to be something that can assist to help you cope with whatever it is you have to cope with. And, you know, when you ask a person about what define healthy for me, you know, someone might say, well, your blood pressure is going to be this number and your cholesterol is going to be that number. And that's correct. Those are healthy numbers. But the connection you described to people's stories, their history, if you don't have your own elders in your life, I liked how you said you can borrow someone else's and have access to that that power from the past. Thank you, Monica Chase.
Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
A lot of folks may know Rita Blumenstein. She was known throughout Alaska and the world as Grandma Rita. And I just wanted to share real quickly her words about healing. We are free to be who we are, to create our own life, out of the past and out of the present. We are our ancestors. When we can heal ourselves, we also heal our ancestors, our grandmothers, our grandfathers, and our children. When we heal ourselves, we heal Mother Earth. And Rita was a Yupik elder from the village of Tununuk, and she was the first traditional doctor in Alaska.
Awesome. Thanks, Monica.
Okay.
That was Monica Chase in a pre-recorded session, but I want to acknowledge that I really appreciate Monica coming on the show and sharing some of the wisdom of what she's experienced in her life, and just the point that when we partake, whether it is of if we are an Indigenous person and we're participating in our Indigenous culture, but as Monica said, any participation in culture that allows you to access the wisdom of the elders that are part of your world really can help you heal and bolster your resilience to cope with the numerous things that we all have to cope with, whether it is lack of sunlight or too much sunlight or chronic diseases or struggling with addiction. These are some major health issues that affect us all here in Southeast, whether if you are the person who's directly struggling or you have a loved one who is coping with something like chronic pain or chronic disease or diabetes. None of us are unaffected by community and public health. And so encouraging you to access the wisdom of your elders and stories, and also listen to the stories of others. And coming back to, where do we hear stories? Public radio. We hear wisdom. We hear shared experiences that, if it only says to you, hey, they have the same problem I do, what do you know? I'm looking at Kari, who says, yes, Martha, you have lots of problems, and sometimes people have them too.
Well, it's a spectrum. Martha and I have a lot in common. You know, it's everything from validation to inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think sometimes in our culture, if we don't hear the story, a story that reflects our experience, validation isn't there, and then the sense of community and shared experience isn't there. And so, but then there's the other, when you hear a story that's unique or an approach that's unique, that's inspiring. So I think that's what Raven Radio gives to us. That's what culture gives to us, is anything from validation all the way to inspiration and everything in between.
Nicely put. You're listening to Raven Radio. This is Martha Pearson. I've been your host this hour for our focus on health and health topics in the region. And we could go on and on. We could talk for days about health, because it really is the litmus test for so many other aspects of our community and our cultures that tell us how we're doing. And but we do have limited time. We're coming to the end of our hour here. Now is your chance to give us a call at 747-5877 and show us what you think about Raven Radio as a partner in your health and your healthcare, letting you know what options are available for you and your family. The information, that knowledge is power piece. Where do you get your information? Who's going to give you the straight scoop on what's out there and what you need to think about for your health?
What's interesting is that in the state of Alaska, radio was the first form of telehealth. It wasn't public radio. It was mm-hmm. the radio waves that allowed the village health workers to actually connect to the public health nurses mm-hmm. initially during the TB epidemic and eventually to the hospitals. And I've been here long enough that that we still called it, when the health aides would call in from the villages to talk about a patient to the doctor, we called it radio medical traffic, even though we were using telephones.
That is cool.
Yeah, so radio, just the technology, is the first telehealth that was ever introduced into the state. And, you know, when it comes down to it, it's still a very, very valuable form of health information sharing.
Exactly. It lets us live here, lets us live, you know, in all the places we want to live and do the work we want to do, which is out in the water and out in the woods and up and down a mountain. If that's where you choose to be, then you can still access some radio and get the information that's going to help you that day. Fred, do we have any other announcements that we need to cover today?
Oh, just that you folks listening, you've been challenged by Sea Alaska Corporation. They've put up $2,500. So ring those phones, 907-747-5877, or you can use the computer. Go online to our website, kcaw.org. And remember, when you make a contribution, you're entered into the drawing to win 2 round-trip tickets on Alaska seaplanes wherever they fly. And even sustaining members, you're automatically entered because you donate every month. But feel free to donate a little more for our news team, our news department.
Do we still have a toll-free number as well? Is the 1-800-747-5877? So if you're in one of our outlying communities and don't want to, you know, get that
pay
charge,
that extra.
Okay,
pay
well,
that.
I'm getting a no from Tom Clark.
Oh, we don't. Oh. We do not have that number anymore.
Scratch that.
Okay, but I withdraw that piece of misinformation. But
go.
It's a quick call. It's a quick call.
It is a quick call, and you can.
Tom's good. Tom's
you
fast.
Can access kcaw.org if you are a person who is surfing the web on their computer or on their phone or on their tablet. lots of ways to get here and share your hard earned to help us to keep going and to keep the information flowing out and help the health of Southeast remain to be as spectacular as it is. We've talked a little about public health nursing, talked a little about Indigenous culture as a source of health, and some very natural steps that all of us can take, such as just getting enough exercise, getting enough sunlight. These are some very seemingly simple, but still sometimes hard to access things. So a lot of good information has just been shared in this hour that can, we hope, help you to reframe and feel like you have a pathway to be healthier. And you can share that pathway with us if you give us a call at 747-5877.
And I just want to say, Martha, how much I appreciate what you do on the weekends. I love to tune into your show. It's one of those habits I have because usually I'm doing some errands around town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, you know, again, I've been, well, as my husband says, practicing medicine. I don't know, practicing, you know. Well, I've been working in the medical field
yeah.
and hopefully not practicing too much. But
I know.
Anyway.
It implies that you're not good enough to actually
exactly he's
do
like suspicious of the medical realm just because of that, but welcome to my husband.
Yeah.
Love you, dear. Anyway, I learn new things, you know.
Yeah.
I love I'm a learner bee, and I love tuning into your program with the topics that you pick and the people that you bring in to our life here on the KCAW airwaves.
Well, right back at you. It is my treat. I have more fun than a barrel of monkeys doing a show. So that's another idea out there. It's fun to have guests on the Health Chat Show. It is fun to bring your information forward to Raven Radio so that we can share it with our community. If you're doing a group, if you're doing something that promotes health, there's hundreds of ways people are volunteering and providing wonderful services across our communities. And how do we share information about, mm-hmm. you know, a new activity at Braveheart Volunteers, or a new activity at SAIL,
yeah.
or a new activity for kids that are doing something, mm-hmm. you know, like Boys on the Run or mm-hmm. Girls on the Run. These are, you know, local programs that are just fantastic, and Raven Radio helps you get there. Thanks again for listening today. This is Martha Pearson. I was your host, joined by Kari Lundgren and Fred Olson here in the studio at KCAW.